For this morning. Today we have the pleasure of hearing from Julian Munyaneza speaking about her own personal experiences during the time of the Rwandan genocide in 1994. So please join me in welcoming Julian. Thank you.
First of all, I would like to thank you all for the prayers for my husband. Because I think 3 weeks ago I asked Pastor Andy to pray for him. He was not really well. He's doing much better, but he's not there yet. When I was asked, Andy, we had a talk about other things. Then I told him part of my story. Then he said, why don't you present the story? Why don't you tell the story to the congregation? To brothers and sisters in the church. I said, sure. Especially because I had just published that testimony, and it would be good if I don't have much time to tell you all of it, then you can read it. 1993, that's the time, end of 1993, that's the time I left my country. I had just received a job offer to go to London to serve as the regional coordinator for Africa and the Middle East within the World Association for Christian Communication. I left, but that time was already tense in Rwanda. 90 to 93 was a very bad period for Rwanda. That's a time when everything was cooking up, when grenades were being thrown anywhere, anyhow, if they suspected you of being a Tutsi or a supporter of Tutsis, and things were bad. So leaving at that time and going to UK was a blessing in disguise, because I wouldn't be standing here had I been in Rwanda in 1994. The genocide, many people, who hasn't heard of the genocide of Rwanda against Tutsis? Anyone who hasn't? I left my husband and our children, three of them, in Rwanda when I left Rwanda. My husband, I can tell you, was killed 5 times, but he didn't die. Meaning what? Meaning that a machete was put on his head. Grenades were thrown in our compound. Even a mortar came all the way from wherever they were fighting and hit a pillar in front of our house and didn't break or didn't destroy our house, and many, many other stories. I was in the UK, the genocide happened. I remember friends who are here at that time, who were praying for us. Who knew this? There's Christine Greenaway, there's Jonathan, he knew as well. There's Nyambura, I think she's downstairs. And other people who came to know the story, like Christoph Ben and others. There's Anna, where's Anna? Anna from the Y, all those people knew about the genocide, and many people prayed for us. How do you deal with a situation where people are being killed anyhow, anywhere, at any time, with anything? And you know your husband and children are there. I'm not even talking about brothers and sisters, because those went. You don't even think about them. And you are thousands of miles away. Of course, I have been a Christian for over 40 years. I trust God, I trusted God, I trust God for anything that can happen. But times come when you ask yourselves, where is God in all this? Hence the title of my talk. When the war broke out on the 6th of April 1994, when the president's, the ex-president's plane was put down. By the way, we don't know yet who put it down, even if there are so many theories about it. And but that was not, the most important thing is not to know who shot it down, but the consequences of it. Because most of us, those in the country and those outside the country, when we heard that the plane had been shot down, most of us said, this is the end of Rwanda, especially the end of Rwandan Tutsis and others. Why? Because it didn't happen as a surprise, by the way. And that's why we Rwandans really, even now, when you say, oh, the international community is good, is doing good work in Sudan, in South Sudan, in Zimbabwe or Congo or Burundi, whatever, we say, that's a good thing because they didn't do the same for us. We had about 5,500 peacekeepers in Rwanda before the genocide. I personally, because I was, before I went to UK, I was working in communication with the Council of Churches of Rwanda. I was the director of communication. So I used to go to press conferences with the top guys of the UN. I know General Dallaire personally, for example. We used to give him interviews. When the genocide happened, you would have expected the peacekeepers to react, to act, to defend, to do something. But I have been a year in the UN system. You don't just do, you follow orders. Even when thousands of people are being killed, you follow orders. You don't intervene. You are there to keep peace. People are being killed next door, everywhere. You are driving over dead bodies, and yet you are told, don't do a thing. General Dallaire warned the UN and the international community concerning the genocide. We knew something bad was being prepared and was going to happen in Rwanda, but to what extent, we didn't realize until it happened. Questions I ask myself, not as often as I used to, is, are these the Rwandans I know? The people you have been sharing everything with, you have been sharing even salt. If you don't have salt, I just go to Nyambura. Can I have salt? And then during the genocide, I am the one who takes a machete and cut her head or rape her daughters or do things. What happened to us, Rwandans? But it taught us as well that each one can do things we think we are not capable of. When we feel threatened or frightened and other things. I don't think I'll go into details. So you ask yourself, so why the genocide? Why did it happen? People ask, is it just really because of the ethnic differences? Can you hear me still? Because of Tutsis and Hutus, and we forget also the third group of Rwandans, Twas, which is a pygmy group. We don't even talk about them. The killing of Tutsis was an excuse. It was more greed and hunger for power. But to kill the unwanted people gave opportunity to the devil to do what they wanted to do. Kill the Tutsis, they are the enemies. Kill the Tutsis, they want to take over power, to take over our power. Kill them. They are beautiful, they are tall, they are this, they are that. But seriously, is that a reason to exterminate a people, except that God doesn't allow If God hasn't said you go forever, you don't go. There are Tutsis now in Rwanda, and they're all over the place. So they couldn't keep them all. Democracy. I love it when I hear you people from democracies. I really love it. Because what does democracy mean, really? Because many Rwandans died in the name of democracy. Many, okay, we had one party, then another one, then the Rwandan Patriotic Front made of mostly Rwandan refugees, Tutsi refugees, but also of Hutus who had been against the government of the time. So because they couldn't stay in the country, they joined the Rwandan Patriotic Front, the Tutsi Majority Party. And then we have another social party and the Green Party and this and that. I could have started my own party for the Christians, maybe. It didn't work. Democracy killed us. And it is when everything else has stopped working. You're at the end of your story, of your French, of your Kinyarwanda, of your English, of your Chinese, as we say. You have nowhere to go. You are hunted like, I don't know what. You have no space. You have no refuge. That's the time you then remember that God is God. I was in the UK. I could see friends who were working in Geneva. They could see, you have seen some of you have seen the images. I wondered, will I ever see my husband again? Will I see my children again? Three of them. Faith. And by the way, Nyambura is the godmother of our daughter because she was my husband's classmate. That's how far we go, 78. Then Dorothy, the second one, and then Benjamin. When the war broke out, you try, if something really happened outside here, you see how we run. We would all run, we'd try to run here or there, even where there's no door, we'd try to, if something's threatening us out there. That's how my husband got separated from our children. And Ben was only six. And that's how also the three of them got separated. Our first daughter went with family friends, and Dorothy and Ben went with another family. When they told me what they went through, days without water, without food, sleeping out there, living on drinking. God heals, by the way. When we talk about healing, I was shocked that our children never got sick when we got them back to UK. They didn't get worms or whatever, considering the water they were drinking. Anyway, my husband remained in Rwanda, in Kigali. The children went all over the places. My husband couldn't go. He was a target as well. So he was hiding. But where do you hide? Where do you hide? The children went separate ways. And our first daughter went with a family. They went to a former German mission school and hospital. That's where many people were hiding. And the day my husband's brother went to fetch her, you read that in my book. You have to buy it. He went, walked miles and miles to bring her to the village where my husband came from. And the following day, all the families, 35 people, all pastors and their families. Because they said, oh, we take you to that place, this mission, nobody can touch you. It's a Christian center. It's a Christian place. By the way, there's a history to that. When, this is not the first genocide, it's the biggest. But whenever we had trouble in Rwanda, people would run to church buildings because there was security. Nobody would dare to attack them. And it was true. In 1959, it happened. In 1963, it happened. In 1973, it happened. And people would run to our church here and remain here. Nobody, no killer, would follow them to the church. But not 1994. That's why we say the genocide was a demonic attack. Because if many people got killed at the same time, it was in churches. If you go to Rwanda, I know Christoph has visited the memorial, Kigali Memorial, and others. And you visit, they tell you how many people were killed in churches, mostly in Catholic churches, buildings. They just come, they just rape. Women, wives in front of their husbands, and daughters in front of their parents before killing them. My biggest nightmare while in UK, by the way, was not about Malachi, sorry. It was about the girls. Because girls were, rape is not a strong word for me. It was done. Things were done to them, to girls, small ones, big ones. And I just prayed. Like never before. I know you pray, and I'm a woman of prayer. But that time, from April to July, end of July, when I went to Rwanda to find them, I prayed. I covered those girls with the blood of Jesus. I just prayed for protection because they did things you don't want to know about. And by the way, nobody touched them. That was a testimony. A side event to that, my second daughter, our second Dorothy, she's a performer, she's an artist. She has just put together a show called Unwanted. And this show is about raped women in conflict situations. Out of the rapes come children. Those children are called unwanted. It will come here to Geneva, I let you know. It has been there since July. She has been already to Sarajevo, she has been to other places, to Berlin and other places to perform. Now, how did I get them back? I'm leaving out some details. In the office, I will never, never forget the support I got. From my boss, Carlos Vage, my colleagues, the members of Central Committee like Christine and Jonathan and others, from friends who were praying and writing, a time came. I was working. When you get busy, you forget some things. It was when I went to my place when things got really I remember one night, and that's the core of my story, where is God when we need him most? I went to my small apartment in North London. I just took off my shoes and then I went flat on the floor and prayed. Not a long prayer, but a loud prayer, because the neighbors upstairs came running. They knew about the genocide. They knew that I was alone waiting for the husband and children to hear from them. They came running. They said, Julien, are you okay? I told them, I'm fine. I'm just talking to my God. If he's God, he's going to do it. If he's not going to do it, he's still God, because we can't quarrel with God. But my prayer was, you read it in my book if you buy it. We did it. I didn't go to London just like that. Because we had lived in Germany, we had just gone home to Rwanda to be with our family in our culture, do things in Rwanda. But a time came when God opens the door, you enter, right? So I went. We had prayed about it. Should I go back? What about the children and their education in another culture? And then. But God answered all the questions. So I went and saved my life. I didn't know by then. I prayed. I said, God, you didn't bring me to UK to make me a childless mother or to make me a widow. I'm too young to be a widow, as if young women cannot be widows. So I pray to you, if you have to resurrect Malachi and Faith and Dorothy and Ben, you just do it just for me. And I am hoping to see them again in this life. I know resurrection will happen. We said it a few minutes ago. The resurrection will happen, but I want to see them in this life again, even if it means you resurrect them just for me. Then I kept quiet. Today is a testimony, right? I felt after that prayer, I kept quiet, as if waiting for something to happen, whether he will take me and drop me in Rwanda or drop them in my place. But I felt after that prayer, those who know my story, they know the story. I felt some peace I had never felt before for the 3 months. I felt as if somebody, really a presence, as if somebody was hugging me and comforting me. And I heard a voice. Don't ask me. Maybe God has spoken to you in a different way. But when you need God and when you challenge them, I think my prayer challenged God. He couldn't resist it. So I felt like, you will see them. Then I woke up. I got up and I ate. I had lost so much weight. I didn't even eat. I didn't even feel like eating. And by the way, I had saved really a lot of money. I had, I think, 5,000 pounds on there, sitting, waiting to hear so that I can just go. It's a lot of money, 5,000 pounds at that time. The following day, I go to the office with a new energy. People think, what has happened? They were suspicious. I went straight to my boss. I told him, you know what? I'm going to Rwanda. He said, no way. By the way, nobody was going to Rwanda except for the UN planes or those who are helping the refugees. No flight, nothing. They said, something's not working right now. Maybe she can't hold it anymore. I told him, I'm going to Rwanda, whether you want it or not. What am I doing here anyway? Without my husband, without my children, without knowing whether they are alive or dead. Okay. He called his assistant. He said to her, could you please book a flight for Julien to go to Rwanda, to Nairobi, because flights were going to Nairobi. And then from there to Uganda. I went to Uganda, and from Uganda, then I went into Rwanda. One way, not return. because nobody was going to Rwanda to come back. The war was still going on. They were not sure whether I would come back or not. What you don't know, and I didn't know by the time, friends across the UK and in other parts of the world were forming a chain of prayer for me. I didn't know. Every day, there was somebody praying for us. A chain of prayer for a month, from the time I left the UK to the time I found Malachi and the children and brought them back to UK. I went. To cut the story short, when I arrived in Nairobi, people said, you can't go to Rwanda. My husband's brother-in-law was studying in Kenya. Said, no, you can't go to Rwanda. Nobody goes to Rwanda. How will you go anyway? I said, you know what? God will find a way. They said, okay, we pray for you while you go. I said, no, you are coming with me. He said, I can't enter Rwanda now. I have my own family, so, okay. Why don't you come with me to the border, to the Rwandan-Ugandan border, and then from there you wait for me? He said, okay, I will be there waiting for you, praying. He's a Christian. We went. We bought tickets and went. Arriving at the border, there was a woman, Nyambura knows her, Esther Mujawayo. Her parents, her father was a pastor. He had been buried with his wife alive. They had buried them up to here, and anyway. And her husband had died, so she was alive with her three daughters. She said to me, have you dropped from heaven? Where did you come from? I said, from the UK. Yeah, but she said, how did you come? Nobody travels and nobody wants to go to Rwanda. It's a living hell. I said, Esther, I prayed. Until God tells me it's not possible, I won't go. So you see, I was really, really holding on to that prayer. She said, anyway, even if you can't go, who will take you? I have money, I will rent a car and a driver. She said, but no driver will want to go into Rwanda. I said, wait and see. Even if you find somebody to take you, you will not get, if you want to go into Rwanda, especially journalists, they needed a special permission stamped by the new Rwandan government forces, military forces at the border. And it took days, weeks. I said, come on. If God can't provide me with this piece of paper, then it's no God. She said, Juliana, I think really somehow maybe I had lost it. Maybe my faith was becoming too much for people. Anyway, I continued. I found a driver who used to drive journalists, BBC journalists, CNN journalists into Rwanda during the genocide and bring them back. I bought rice, I bought milk, I bought oil, I bought shoes, I bought things, and put in his truck. And people said, but aren't you wasting your money? I said, no. What is money anyway compared to people? And how many thousands of Rwandans had lost money and houses and cars and things? So I did. I went then to the border to meet this guy. He was a colonel, I think, in the army. He saw me. The way I looked, I think he had pity on me. He said there was a long queue of people waiting. So they were going around asking, what's your problem? What's your issue? Why do you want to go to Rwanda? When he came to me, he said, ma'am, he was a young guy. What is your issue? What is your story? I said, you know, when the genocide happened, I had just left my country. And my husband and my children were still in Rwanda waiting to join me later. So I want to know whether they're still alive or not. He wrote on my paper, they always write the reason why you're going, to seek for survivors or to look for survivors.
He gave it to me 10 minutes after, stamped, I'm ready to go.
Esther couldn't believe it. My brother-in-law couldn't believe it. People said, "What did she give some bribe?" I wouldn't give any bribe to anybody. Guys, sorry, friends. I have healed of many images of the genocide, really. But one thing which sometimes comes back to me, especially when I'm telling the story, I think I'm healed, really. I don't cry as much as I used to. Rwanda is a small country. You have been to Rwanda. Those who have been there, you know, it's just a small country and overpopulated. It was not there then, it is now. Everywhere, people working, shouting, doing things, busy. By the way, then they said Rwanda is a country of 1,000 hills. They don't lie. They are really hills. She was there recently. She confirmed. Excuse me. When we entered Rwanda with this driver, what shook me off was the emptiness of the space. It was empty. You remember the exodus to Congo? That was the time. Rwanda was empty, no life, except for dead bodies all over and dogs feeding on dead bodies. I said, is there a worse hell than this? And the smell of, do you know they had to kill dogs? Because dogs were, they had been used to human flesh and they were attacking people. So they had to kill many dogs. Anyway, to cut the story short, I asked the driver to drive to our church. My husband is a minister of religion, as we call them in the UK, he's a pastor. So we went straight to our parish where he used to preach in Kiovu. And I didn't expect to find people there I knew, especially not a Tutsi, not one Tutsi I was expecting to find there. And whom did I see when I landed? We landed there. Somebody from my childhood village, Justin, and his wife, but with no children. Their children had fled like mine, and they had been killed with other families. Then he saw me, he said, "Have you dropped from heaven like Esther?" I said, "No. God has brought me here." Then he said, "Justin, any news of Malachi?" Oh, Pastor Malachi, they call him Pastor Malachi. He looked at me, said, "You haven't heard?" I said, "What? What now, God? You haven't heard?" Okay. He said, 2 days ago, Malachi and your children and other 18 children came back." I said, "Huh? Come again? You see, I have prayed about it, but I didn't believe it when he told me." He said, "They came back with 18 children they had found along the way, brought them." Do you know what I did? I just knelt down there and then on the concrete. And I said, "If there is a God outside my God, I will not worship any other God." So I said, "So you have done it, Lord." And the next story is we went to our house, destroyed, no windows, no nothing. They were sleeping on the floor. My husband used to be a tall guy. I think with age we shrink. He knows, she knows. He used to be a tall
guy. And so imagine spending almost 4 months on the run, in the hiding, no food, no eating. If he hadn't been my husband, I wouldn't have recognized him. He looked so bad, so haggard. I don't wish any war, any genocide, any conflict to anyone. He looked so bad with trousers that couldn't even fit, with a beard. He's planning to grow his beard in his retirement. I said, no way. It will bring back that memory. I don't want it. Horrible. And the children went in torn clothes, and by the way, they had lice all over the place. It was the 25th of July, 94, and that day is our daughter's birthday, Dorothy. The first thing she said, Mom, this is the best birthday gift or ever. And we have been praying for you. I said, you have been praying for me. You were in danger. I was out there and you came enjoying my, you know. But she said, no, we were together. I didn't tell you how they found each other. I will tell you the story another time. We took the car. We went to the authorities. We said, you cannot leave the camp without permission. The new mayor of the city said, you can go, but I don't have any passports to give you. And that was another miracle, because in their running, my husband had an inner pocket in his trousers. He had put the passports. They lost everything else but the passports. So we drove back with the driver, the Ugandan driver, went to Nairobi. Then Nairobi, they said, you won't get a visa to UK. And by the way, it's true. You don't just get a visa to UK coming from Africa and coming from Rwanda, a conflict zone. What are you going to do? We don't need Rwandans now in UK. I said, if it has to be, I stay in Nairobi, but at least I have found them. But they gave us a visa. And by the way, Carlos, my boss, had said, when you find them, send a fax. There was no email, no WhatsApp or things, you know. Technology is good. I wish I had some that time. I sent an email, a fax that I had found them. And we traveled business class, 5 of us. God has humor, right? 5 people. And when people looked at us in the business class, you know, because we really looked like refugees. But I said, you guys, you don't know why we're here. You don't put us here. God did. So we traveled in business class and back to UK. To finish, because I cannot tell you everything now. When you have been hungry for months or for days or for weeks, it's wrong to eat quickly. And that's what I had planned to do. I have found them, so I'm going to feed them. I take them to the McDonald's, I take them to fried chicken, and fried to Chinese restaurant. I planned I'm going to really treat them to every restaurant possible. 2 ladies, I mentioned them in my book, former missionaries to Rwanda. They told me, we have gone through war. We know you cannot, I will not allow you to take them to your house. You bring them to us for 2 weeks. And they fed them slowly by slowly. Light food, but the most important thing, they were women of God, one of them has passed away, is to pray for them and listen. Because they talked. Oh my God, they talked. Non-stop. At least the children did, and that healed them. Guys, talk. You have issues, talk. They come up. You heal. My husband has been talking slowly by slowly, but he's still carrying that burden. She knows. Christine knows too.
At night they would shout, "They're coming to kill us, they're coming to kill us," nightmares. But at the end, they got healed. And here we are. They are all of them grown-ups with children. And life goes on. Is God God? Yes. Is he there when we most need him? He is. What we need is to let him be God. I thank you. And if you want to know the rest, I can come back. Thank you so much. God bless you. The title of my small book, because it's small. When I wrote it, I looked for publishers, and there's a Christian publishing house I was recommended. And they said, "Send us the story." I sent it. They said, "It is too small for our standards, but because of the content, we will take it on." So they published it. And they said, "Why didn't you write more?" I said, "A testimony, when you write a too long testimony, you tend to repeat yourself. And you read it, I think in an hour you are done." But I'm glad I did it, and I'm my next one. So it's really £6, and I can take six francs or 10 or whatever you want to give, because I am sending whatever comes of this to an orphanage, to children who suffered the genocide. I didn't tell you a story of my niece who was raped during the genocide and was infected with HIV. So she's HIV positive. She's living with it. It's a legacy. She reminds us of that. So, thank you guys. Yeah?
I have something to say. Thank you, Julian. It was interesting what Julian was saying, because I had to go on mission to Rwanda, and I have to say I was really worried because I didn't know what to do. Well, of course, it was not when this was happening. It was later on, right, with the World Bank and the UN. But I have to say, one of the things that was really hard for me, I couldn't sleep. So I was there for 4 days. And for that 3 days, I just couldn't sleep. I was having nightmares. And then the president of Rwanda actually has suggested that the participants go to the memorial center. And that actually helped me personally, because of course there was a lot of things happening, the atrocity of everything, but it also explained the history of genocide, not just in Rwanda, but everywhere else in the world. And through that, when you then see the burial place, I had that peace. I was able to pray, and I was able to, you know, also ask God, you know, exactly what you're saying is that, God, how can you make that happen? How can other people start seeing each other as cockroaches and stop seeing them as a human being? So I just wanted to share that with you, and also just to thank God for your life, Julian, for really explaining to us that, in a way, love is better than hate. And we pray that God would heal the people of Rwanda and the world, who often find themselves in a ridiculous place. So thank you very much, Julian.
Rwanda is now a beautiful country. It has always been. It's the best place to go. there's a lot of security. If you hadn't known, you wouldn't even recognize that there was a genocide in Rwanda. I invite you to visit Rwanda, if you can.